The court's decision was justified.
I think it's sad that this got turned into a white and black issue.
What happened to Michael Brown was tragic.
Share your thoughts on every issue when you use the open mic feature in the News 96.5 app.
Welcome into extended special programming here on News 96.5. React now. Ferguson, the whole story, your thoughts on what happened and what's happening right now, not only in the city of Ferguson, Missouri, but now across the United States. This hour focused on your reaction, how you feel, how you think, and anything else that you may want to share with us. I'm Tony Marino. Great to have you along. Thank you for being with us. News 96.5 legal analyst Sherry DeWitt is here. She'll address any legal questions that you have about the case. Sherry, by the way, also has her own show here on News 96.5 on Sunday mornings. Sherry, welcome back.
Thank you, Tony.
We are hopefully in for a very fun, informative hour.
I hope so. I know there are a lot of questions and a lot of perspectives on this.
As you can hear from the open mics that we've been playing the last couple of days, it is a people are passionate about it. It's a passionate, sensitive issue.
It is very similar to George Zimmerman as far as the passions are concerned, and because we have, I mean, there are lots of similarities between these two cases.
Absolutely.
Because we have two cases relatively closely together like this. And in both instances, the system did not give the result that a lot of people were hoping for.
Mm-hmm.
There continues to be a press toward change so that, God forbid, something like this should happen again, the system might work differently.
President Obama yesterday saying he is more than willing to work with people that have constructive ideas, constructive ways to perhaps mend some of the wounds or help join police forces and communities together.
Well, of course, the Browns are pressing very hard to require police officers to have on-body cameras.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people are pressing for that now.
Right. And, you know, they want that to become a federal or national law. And the reason for that is pretty interesting, because depending on your perspective, a police officer is either cloaked with the presumption of authority.
Right.
You're presuming there's an officer involved. They're going to be telling the truth. Or, depending on your perspective, you have a biased attitude or a cautious attitude toward authority and how that authority is used, whether it's being abused or not. And the cameras, people believe, will actually show what happens real time. No, he said, she said,
mm-hmm.
and you can actually see the interaction.
I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves, but I'm going to guess from your perspective, cameras for all policemen would be good or bad as far as law firms are concerned. Is that going to open up a lot more cases, or is that just going to make it a lot easier for people like yourself to determine what really happened?
You know, it's kind of interesting. It's sort of like red light cameras, you know, is it going to make it easier or more difficult, or breathalyzer tests, for example. To some extent, it makes it easier because you have a visual. But then you have, you know, okay, what angle was the camera pointed on? What was going on outside the perimeter? You know, so there could be challenges as well if that law should come to pass.
As we said right at the beginning, this hour is all about the listener and the listener's perspective. We want to know what you think, how you feel. Through the course of the hour, Sherry DeWitt will answer your legal questions. And on the flip side of that, I'm actually going to be asking you, the listener, questions, because there's a lot of things that I want to know. You know, Sherry, you mentioned the similarities between the George Zimmerman case. Obviously, the Trayvon Martin killing was a national story, but it happened here. We are closer to it than anybody else. So I want to know what people in our community are thinking more so, you know, than anybody else.
Right.
There's been a lot of talk the last couple of days, and for lack of a better word, I'm just going to say how stupid it was for them to make this announcement at 9 o'clock at night. I would love to hear from local law enforcement, maybe firemen, you know, first responders. What would their reaction be if we had such a hot issue like that here in our city, and let's say the Orange County prosecutor, you know, waited till 9 o'clock at night. So we want to hear from you. And again, if you're in law enforcement, if you're a paramedic, first responder, what do you think about how they made the announcement at 9 o'clock at night? I mean, they really telegraphed the situation and telegraphed the violence, which is as big of a story as the story itself. We do have some phone calls already at 855-297-9696. Open mics have been coming in nonstop. We'll be playing those as well throughout the hour. Right now, Ann from Palm Bay. Hi, Ann. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My opinion on everything that is happening, I blame a lot on Barack Obama, Eric Holder, Al Sharpton, just to name a few of the race bakers here in America. I'm from the Caribbean island, and I'm not exposed to this kind of racism that these people preach every day. This young man was murdered, not by Officer Darrell Simmons. He was murdered by Al Sharpton, Jesse Jackson, Eric Holder, all of them who are preaching racism every day. They are not teaching the black community especially to have respect for authority figure and law enforcement. They were taught to disrespect them. They were taught to hate white people. And this young man has a chip on his shoulder from the day he was born to disrespect authority and disrespect white people because they had black people in slavery for how many years. If we must free, we need to free these young black men of mental slavery, and they have to free their own mind. They can't listen to these race baiters, racist prejudice. Barack is the worst president America I've ever had in history, and he's disgust me. He knows about the things that this man says. He's supposed to bring peace and unity. His mother was a white woman. A black man. He's on both sides of the fence. He needs to teach respect.
And I appreciate your comments. Very interesting comments. I appreciate you taking the time to call us. Let's talk about that a little, because regardless if Michael Brown were white, Chinese, American Indian, anything else, what a lot of people are saying, exactly like Ann said, you know, if you don't get involved in that situation, if you don't put yourself in those circumstances, you're probably not going to get, in this case it was the worst case scenario, but you're probably not going to get tased or beat up by the police or in this case shot and killed if you're not, you know, in that situation, assuming that this is really what happened, but all the evidence shows that this is what happened.
Well, whether Michael Brown was black or white, it's a tragedy that happened, and tragedies have happened between police officers and white individuals as well, even white teenagers or white children. And whenever there's a tragedy like that, there is outrage, regardless of the race of the victim.
Now, Anne echoes the sentiment of a lot of folks that it's not a race issue, it's a societal issue, that people are not raising their kids the right way, or we don't have the kind of respect that we used to have for law enforcement and, you know, various things.
Well, that may be true. The other side of it, of course, is that law enforcement has to deserve our respect. And a lot in the minority communities don't believe that they do.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very big disconnect in perspectives. And the investigation needs to be, why is there that disconnect?
Right, right. And Ann mentioned Eric Holder. When Eric Holder first went to Ferguson, a lot of folks were not happy about that either. Again, thank you for the phone call, Ann. Happy Thanksgiving. Let's move on to Mike from Port Orange. Mike.
Hey, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, sir. What's on your mind?
Yeah, you guys got it exactly right. It's all about respect. I grew up in New York City, and I was not the model person, but I remember coming home, I was a kid, and a cop had told me to come off the corner, and, you know, next time I come around here, you better be gone.
Right.
And I wasn't, and I got swatted upside the head. And I went home, my father looked at me and saw this big red thing on the side of my head. He said, what happened? I said, that dumb cop, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And he hit me on the other side. He said, well, that man tells you to move, you move.
Right, right.
And you know what? And I would never in a million years dream of hitting a cop, screech is gone.
Right.
Hey, you know what? If you were going to run from a cop, you better make sure he was crippled or something, because if he caught you, you're tuna. You knew it. Absolutely knew. If you ran from that guy and you made him run after you, you were getting a tune-up.
Mike, we really appreciate the phone call. Thank you very much. Mike probably, again, echoes the sentiment of a lot of folks. I mean, I know when I grew up in New York, by the way, but that doesn't have anything to do with it. I mean, you... In my generation, let's say, you would never have thought of hitting a cop, you know.
Well, you know, a lot of people do feel that it's a question of discipline, but think about it. You know, the very definition of adolescence, in one sense, is rebellion.
Right.
That's what adolescents do. They rebel against authority. Now, sometimes you're taught there are consequences if you rebel against authority, and sometimes you're not, depending on how you grow up and what lessons you learn growing up.
Well, and Mike also mentioned that when his father found out that he got whacked in the head from the cop, his father gave him another whack in the head. And that's, you know, today his father would be in trouble too. So it's a whole different thing.
It is a whole different thing. But again, there's that perspective. There does have to be respect for authority. On the other hand, the authority really needs to understand the other perspective as far as suspicion of the authority is concerned.
All right, 219 at News 96.5. You're listening to React Now, Ferguson, the whole story. Your thoughts on what happened and what's happening now. I'm Tony Marino alongside News 96.5 legal analyst Sherry DeWitt. One more quick call from Bertha, and then we'll have to take a break. Good afternoon, Bertha.
Hi, good afternoon. I agree with the body cameras, but we also need to remember cops years ago were not trained to shoot to kill. They were trained to maim. My brother was a cop. He shot three guys and never killed either one of them, and they had a gun on him. He was a marksman. And I think we can't always take the cop's word, because we know there's a lot of crooked cops. And I also think with the video violent games today, not only are these kids are playing, I believe these cops are playing it. So when you got that mentality, it isn't when you grew up and when I grew up, and I'm 70. It's a different world. So I want body cameras.
All right, Bertha, thank you. Greatly appreciate the comments. There you go. An advocate of the body cameras. Bertha, you know, again, not all cops are following the book. So again, the body cameras are going to prove that the people that are doing things right handle the situation right. And if you didn't handle the situation right, the camera is going to prove that as well.
The camera may be a help, but it's not going to be the be-all and end-all, the answer. Then you have issues. I'm a lawyer. I think about these things. When are police officers going to be required to use them? Just when they're on duty? How far on and off duty, when they're in their cars, when they're out of their cars, what's the angle of the camera going to be? You're still not going to be able to see what happens behind them. So it's not going to be the answer. It may be helpful, however.
If you're in a tussle, like Officer Wilson apparently was, in many cases, the camera's going to get knocked off anyway, right?
Correct. Or, you know, a camera is, you know, it's one focused in one direction, and
right,
it may not tell the entire
right
story.
Once a physical altercation occurs, in many cases, the camera is going to fall off or get turned off or get knocked off. So that'll be another thing we'll have to deal with. All right, John, Ken, Jenny, we are going to get to you right after the break. Please hold on. We appreciate it. 855-297-9696. If you're sending your comment in via the open mic on the News 96.5 app, we're going to play some of those as well. Stay with us here on News 96.5.
On every issue when you use the open mic feature in the News 96.5 app.
I'm Tony Marino. React Now, Ferguson, the whole story. Your thoughts on what has happened and what is happening now. Joined by News 96.5 legal analyst Sherry DeWitt.
You know, there's been a lot of questioning about the grand jury process in this case and how it was conducted. And it is interesting to talk about from a legal perspective, because typically what happens in a grand jury is the only evidence that's presented to them is the evidence that tends to prove guilt. Exculpatory evidence, which is evidence that tends to prove innocence, is usually not presented to a grand jury. So the only thing the grand jury sees is there enough evidence here? Is there even a scintilla of evidence in order to find that somebody might be able to find this person guilty? That was not how this process was used. Robert McCullough, the prosecutor, decided for whatever reason to present all of the evidence to the grand jury, both evidence, exculpatory evidence and evidence that tended to prove guilt. So what actually happens then is that the grand jury looks to see whether or not it almost acts as a jury rather than a grand jury. In addition, it's unusual for a potential defendant to talk to the grand jury, at least for as long as Darren Wilson did, approximately 4 hours. So if I'm a grand jury and I'm listening to a person in flesh and blood and I hear their side of the story,
right,
it's going to be quite persuasive, especially when you don't have a live person on the other end testifying exactly vis-a-vis what they're saying.
And we heard that that conversation was very conversational and casual and not so much investigative.
Right. And this grand jury had been impaneled for about 4 months before they heard this case, and they were extended on to hear this case. And so they compared this case, I'm sure, to all the other cases they heard during the 4 months. And in none of the other cases did they hear exculpatory evidence. So then that exculpatory evidence could potentially have taken on more weight to give rise to their decision not to indict.
All right, and we are certainly going to talk a lot more about that. That's News 96.5 legal analyst Sherry DeWitt. Let's get a quick phone call in from John. John, welcome to the program.
Yeah, how you doing? Good afternoon.
Thank you.
Though a tragedy, I believe that everyone is overlooking the fact that Mr. Brown put himself in this situation. He was a suspect in a robbery. And he did not follow the officer's instructions, as far as what I know. And my second thought is, why do certain ethnic groups get a pass when it comes to destroying, looting, robbing in front of national TV, and there's not a cop nor a National Guardsman around?
Mm-hmm.
It's very disturbing.
All right, John, we greatly appreciate your phone call and your comments, and we will discuss that on the other side of the news coming up here on the bottom of the hour. Ken, Jenny, and everyone else that's holding on, please hold on. We will get to you, and if you have the News 96.5 app, send in your comment via the open mic. Stay with us here on News 96.5.
Court's decision was justified.
I think it's sad that this got turned into a white and black issue.
What happened to Michael Brown was tragic.
Share your thoughts on every issue when you use the open mic feature in the News 96.5 app.
I'm Tony Marino alongside News 96.5 legal analyst Sherry DeWitt. React now, Ferguson, the whole story. The phone lines are open to you. The airwaves are open to you. Let's get right back to it with Ken in Melbourne. Thank you for hanging on, Ken. What's on your mind?
I just wanted to make a few comments on what, you know, a lot of your listeners have been talking about. I'm a law enforcement officer, been in the biz for about a little over 20 years.
Excellent.
And it's, there's a lot of what everybody's saying is true. You know, there is some societal issues. It goes both ways. The, what I've seen just in my experience is there's a disproportionate number of African-Americans that are unemployed. A lot of the black males are or have been involved with the criminal justice system. It's ridiculous. But and so there's a lot of angst in that neighborhood. But what happens as a police officer, we're authority, you know, and we come in and we're going to tell people what to do, you know, right or wrong in their mind, but we have the authority to do so. You know, most officers that I've ever dealt with anywhere are honest, decent, family men that are just, you know, trying to make a difference in their communities.
Right. But
of course,
to be
any job, I mean, you got bad doctors, you got bad lawyers, you got bad teachers, everywhere, but pretty much everybody's decent guys. But what happens, you come into some of these neighborhoods, and I think it's a generational thing, you know, from back in the civil rights era, whenever, you know, the blacks were struggling for civil rights, and the police, you know, were abusive. Well, it, you know, I think it's a generational thing that's been carried down. And, you know, for, you know, a lot of the black people, your law-abiding black people that are out working and trying to raise their families and stuff, you know, they're disgusted with this as much as anyone. But, you know, you go into a lot of the black neighborhoods where, you know, a lot of people are unemployed and they're just unhappy people.
Mm-hmm.
And you go in there and you're, you know, you get called because of a domestic disturbance or whatever it may be. And you come in here and you're trying to keep the peace and they turn on you.
Ken, we have a lot of phone calls, so we have to kind of move quickly. But I did want to, number one, we appreciate your comments. And I really did, I don't know if you were with us at the beginning of the show, I really did want to hear from a police officer on as far as them waiting until 9 o'clock at night to make this announcement. I mean, how would you feel? What would your reaction be if something like this was happening in your community?
I thought it was ridiculous. I thought that was just fuel for the flame.
Yeah, that's pretty much what everyone is thinking. Thank you very much. Sanford Mayor Jeff Triplett is joining us as well, and then we'll get back to the phone calls. Sherry, anything?
Well, I thought that the officer's comments were really very interesting, showing the perspective where he understands the angst but and the relationship between the community and the officers at the same time, what a difficult job the officers have going into and keeping peace within that community. I thought that was a very interesting comment.
It's a very difficult job, and you have to try and be fair to all sides, you know.
Right. The problem is, you know, as he said, you know, there are a few bad apples in any profession, in any community. But when you're a police officer and something goes wrong, you have that stamp of authority. You are the state.
Mm-hmm.
And so the reaction and the rebellion against that is likely to be stronger than it would be in any other kind of profession.
All right. And as I mentioned, Sanford Mayor Jeff Triplett with us. Good afternoon, Mr. Mayor, and thank you so much for taking time to speak with us. We appreciate that.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
All right. How are you, sir? And first off, what's your reaction to what's happening right now? And what are you hearing in your community that has experienced a similar situation?
We've spent a lot of time talking to our community leaders, you know, a lot of the pastors and the people that were involved in the protest before, leading up obviously to what the grand jury is coming back with, and you know they're upset. There's some angst there as to what came back, but what happened thereafter in Ferguson. And while things were happening there, obviously we were having a prayer vigil is what our protesters. Or not protesters, but people, you know, what they wanted to get across, not only for the families, but for, the people in Ferguson.
Your community, one of the very few communities where people actually gathered on Monday night right after the announcement, but as you mentioned, a peaceful protest, if it was even a protest, a vigil, but interesting that people in your community did come out.
Yeah, and I really have to hand it out to the community leaders that, you know, working with City Hall and the police department, which, you know, have tirelessly worked on the 9-point plan that we put together after the Trayvon Martin, George Zimmerman incident, and, you know, everybody coming together for the betterment of the community.
That's one of the things that I wanted to ask you, Mr. Triplett. I know that after the George Zimmerman case, the community did get together. You had community meetings, and you had pretty in-depth discussions about some of the issues and the relationships between the police and the community. Have they been helpful, and has anything concrete come out of them?
We did. We talked, you know, with the federal, you know, department, the community relations department that helped guide us through some of the process, and then we had the community group that came together for the. For the 9-point plan, you know, with our people working with City Hall, and then we also did the Blue Ribbon panel, talking about the police department, how we could truly get to community policing style of law enforcement, along with hiring the new police chief that was actively involved from his, you know, being outside of Chicago when he came to us. And it's really the trust level that we had was so weak within our neighborhoods with the police department. And it was really about us getting out in, you know, out of the cars, you know, get on your feet, knock on the doors, hand cards out, and say, hey, we have to work together as a community. We at City of Sanford, we have 54,000 residents. We have 130 police officers. They can't be everywhere all the time, and so we really push that you have to have trust and faith that we're going to do the right thing from the law enforcement side, but we need your eyes and ears to help us out. And that's gone a long ways. You know, almost 6,000 doors have been knocked on, you know, over the course of the last year and a half. So it's really opened not only some eyes, but some ears, and putting people together in a relationship versus an adversarial relationship.
Sanford Mayor Jeff Triplett with us now on News 96.5 React Now. Ferguson, the whole story, your thoughts on what happened. And Mayor Triplett, you mentioned Police Chief Cecil Smith. He's really, really been instrumental in developing some of those community relationships, correct?
He absolutely. He's the guy that he'll show up at the scene. He'll show up if there's an incident. He's the first one to open up the dialogue and have the conversation. And it's truly leadership by example, not sitting behind a desk and not pointing the finger at anybody else. He takes full responsibility with what happens.
Mayor Triplett, this is Sherry DeWitt. I have one more question for you.
Yes, ma'am.
What's happened with the Neighborhood Watch program? Has that been revamped or looked at all since?
It was revamped. You know, he spent a lot of time, him and the chief, the captains, working on that. We had some that what really seemed to be the problem was they were too big. There was a lot of people involved, and so the information wasn't truly being disseminated to the police department. So he scaled some of them back, made them true neighborhoods versus, part of the city, so to speak. And they're still active, they're still forming, they're still pushing the information.
Since the Trayvon Martin investigation and the George Zimmerman trial, and all the progress that you've made in the city of Sanford, have other communities locally or nationally come to you and to see what you guys did and how you did it?
We've had a lot of conversations. A lot of that has been with the administration via the chief has spoken at several events, the Sheriff's Association and the Florida State Law Enforcement Association. So has Mr. Bonaparte, who was instrumental as our city manager, relaying what we did, how we did it. And really, we learned some lessons via the hard knocks. And there's other cities that don't need to do that. So there's been a lot of reach out, a lot of conversations, as to what we did right and what we did wrong. So we continue to have those conversations.
That's really good to hear. And kudos again to you, to Cecil Smith, and to the entire Sanford community. We appreciate it again, you taking time out today, Mayor. Have a happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving to you also. Have a great day.
All right.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. There's Sanford Mayor Jeff Triplett. React Now, special programming here on News 96.5. I'm Tony Marino with legal analyst Sherry DeWitt. Ferguson, the whole story, your thoughts on what's happened and what's continuing to happen. Protests growing across the country, New York, Atlanta. A couple of people arrested in a protest in Miami last night. Let's get back to the phones. Dan has been hanging on. We appreciate that. Dan in Orlando. Good afternoon.
Yes, sir. I'm just trying to figure out. I only see two similarities between this and the George Zimmerman case, George Zimmerman Trayvon Martin case.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see any other similarities, and to state that those similarities, other than those two, is kind of does a disservice to the police force and also to Trayvon Martin himself.
Well, you're probably correct that there are only a couple of similarities, but yes, there are similarities, and that's a lot of what's coming into play now and fueling the fires that we're seeing.
Well, and one of the similarities that is really quite a big similarity is that both George Zimmerman and Officer Wilson were injured in the altercation. And typically when you have evidence of physical injuries, it goes to proving some kind of theory of self-defense. So there's a similarity there. And the verdict in George Zimmerman was not guilty after going through a trial. And the grand jury decided not to indict in large part because of those what they perceived to be defensive wounds.
All right, Dan, thank you very much. We appreciate the phone call. Cheryl in Orlando has also been hanging on. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi there. How are you?
Great. Thank you for calling. Happy Thanksgiving.
To you as well.
What's on your mind?
Well, I'm disappointed as I listen because people tend to jump to conclusions without truly knowing the whole story. And I think that does a disservice to our country. You know, it's interesting that people are taking a posture and fighting for a cause, and they don't really know what happened. So I've tried to stay neutral as I listen to both sides, and I just think that if people truly understood the dynamics of race and how we all have some level of racism that we deal with as we interact with others, they would begin to better appreciate the anger that seems to be spilling over from this and other scenarios like this. And I think that we have to listen actively to what people are saying. They're concerned not so much about the fact that this person may have done something to the police officer. I think the concern is more that we weren't there, so none of us know the story, and the only person that gets to tell it is the person that's living. And it's unfortunate that we continue to align ourselves.
Well, Sherry, let's go. Cheryl, let's go back to, I think it was your first comment that people are quick to, you know, draw conclusions before they know anything. And that was the very, very first thing that Sean Hannity was saying from the very beginning is, how can, you know, how can you draw a conclusion on one side of the other? What, you know, whatever side of this you're on, you can't make any conclusion until you see the evidence. And a lot of people have still not seen the evidence, which, by the way, we have a lot of it at news965.com for you. But most of these people that are out protesting and burning down their own city and everything don't even realize what half of the facts are. But Sherry, anything?
Well, you know, those who listen to me and my show, they know that my motto is, when it comes to justice, the devil is in the details. Those details are found in the evidence. And if you're really looking for justice, you need to look at the evidence and at the details of the evidence. I agree with you wholeheartedly on that, Cheryl.
All right, Cheryl, thank you very much for the phone call. If we do need to take a quick break, we'll be back with React Now, Ferguson, the whole story, 855-297-9696.
Court's decision was justified.
I think it's sad that this got turned into a white and black issue.
What happened to Michael Brown was tragic.
Share your thoughts on every issue when you use the open mic feature in the News 96.5 app.
The court's decision was justified. President Obama, Al Sharpton, Eric Holder, and the liberal media owe Officer Wilson and his family a public apology.
There really isn't anything left to debate. They've released all the facts. Darren Wilson was innocent.
You want to prevent another Michael Brown incident? Teach your kids to obey the law. Teach them it's wrong to attack the police and rob convenience stores.
Strong comments continuing to come in and in reaction to the decision to not indict Ferguson police officer Darren Wilson. This is React Now, Ferguson, the whole story here on News 96.5. I'm Tony Marino alongside News 96.5 legal analyst Sherry DeWitt. A lot of phone calls and a little bit of time, so let's get right to it. Scott, New Smyrna Beach. Hi, Scott.
Good afternoon, Tony. How are you?
All right, excellent.
Well, first off, I'd like to point out the word civil is being thrown around mighty loosely these days. Al Sharpton is not being civil. The Eric Holder is not civil. And also, that's my first. They're inciting upheaval in what ordinarily could be handled right. Take the white guy, for example, in Sanford who was shot by police simply because he didn't have a peephole and answer the door. And SWAT took him and shot him, took his life. You know, that didn't get airplay. What about the two black gentlemen that abducted a woman from the Daytona Beach area on a vacation who was 18 and had a mentality of a 9-year-old, took her back to their hotel in Orlando and abused and abused and abused and raped?
All right. Well, interesting comment, though. His first comment, Scott, thank you for the phone call. We do appreciate that. Interesting first comment, though. And I'm not sure exactly what he meant about Eric Holder not being civil.
Well, Eric Holder wasn't civil, he said, and neither was Al Sharpton being civil. So it may be the rhetoric that they're using, although we just heard Al Sharpton giving a press conference where he was urging restraint and nonviolence. So it's hard to be civil. when there are under or use civil language or appear to be coming off in a civil way when there's so much emotion underlying what's being said.
All right, Brad in Winter Park. Good afternoon, sir.
Oh, good afternoon. The thing that troubles me most about this is that how the left, MSNBC, a lot of the major news media continues to use Trayvon as a sympathetic, innocent kid with just Skittles when the only eyewitness in that case testified that he saw him on top of George beating his face in. And now we have two African-American witnesses here, according to the evidence that was released, that saw Mr. Brown turn around and then charge the officer. So with these facts, they continue to deny them and paint them both as sympathetic, innocent figures. That's very troubling to me because you're not telling people the whole truth. Now, you may say, was anything excessive? But they're hiding the truth. And what I'm trying to say is that they're being dishonest. I mean, can you guys see that, too, in both instances?
Well, I don't know that I would say that it's dishonest, but clearly in response to the other caller, you know, the justice, the truth, as I say, the devil is in the details. Everything's in the details. And if people don't pay attention to the facts and they don't pay attention to the details, then the truth is not going to come out. And what they're acting on is basically raw emotion or intuition or gut feelings about things. So again, I think that you're right. I think that, you know, the jury spoke as far as the George Zimmerman Trayvon Martin case is concerned. The trial was about George Zimmerman's guilt or innocence. It was not about the victim in the sense of a character assassination or anything else. And so that's what the justice system is designed to do, is determine guilt or innocence and not categorize a victim.
When prosecutor Bob McCullough gave his 45-50 minute dissertation back on Monday night, he did, one of the things he mentioned was that some of those early witnesses did recant their claims of what had happened once the facts were out.
Right. Again, and that's another similarity between the George Zimmerman case and this case. And that's because you remember initially with the media, they took bits and pieces of the clips of the tape to make it appear as if he was definitely a racist, which sparked a lot of the underlying interest in the case.
All right, and real quick, we only have about a minute and a half left. Willie wants to get in on the program. Willie, thank you for the call. What's on your mind real quick? We have about a minute.
I would like to refute both of the last callers that spoke about the Zimmerman case. I watched the whole Zimmerman case, and I was also watching what was going on with the case here. When I saw George Zimmerman, the pictures of George Zimmerman after he supposedly had got beat to a pulp, I didn't see the marks that everybody else was saying that they saw. When I saw the officer that supposedly got beat to a pulp by Hulk Hogan, he looked the same way he looked on the interview that he had this morning. The same little red blushy marks that he have on his face right now, he have the same exact looks that he said how he was beat by this unarmed man. And the case with Zimmerman was that he was supposedly attacked by an unarmed man. The police officer is supposedly attacked by an unarmed man. Zimmerman said he felt for his life, although he had a weapon in his hand. The police officer said, I felt for my life, although I got a weapon in my hand. You got eyewitnesses, two guys.
Willie, I'm going to have to cut you off right there. We really, really appreciate the phone call, though, and the comments, and very quickly here in the close, Jerry. Well, first of all, Trayvon Martin was nowhere near the size of Michael Brown, but a lot of people feel the way Willie feels. George Zimmerman supposedly got beaten up, you know, beaten pretty badly, and then when we saw him, he just had a little cut on his head. And Officer Wilson, no real visible wounds that we know of.
And one of the big issues in both cases was who was the aggressor.
Right. And in both cases, it was supposedly the victim was the aggressor.
That's what the jury and the grand jury respectively concluded.
Sherry, thank you as always. Make sure you catch Sherry's show on Sherry DeWitt on Sunday mornings here on News 96.5. That's going to wrap it up for us. Thank you for all the listener reaction. And we will have plenty more coming up on Orlando's Evening News at 6 here on News 96.5.